It was a year ago, as things worked out, that I happened to have the opportunity to bring a lesson, first lesson of 2015. It was about, based in part on, the movie A Wonderful Life, and I just thought I'd use it again. No. But that movie always stands out as one that I appreciate, because in it, George Bailey comes to be reminded of not what you have in riches or wealth or power or position, but it's touching the lives of those around you that you meet day by day that really matters. And the influence that good people leave behind has such an impact. And I think of the influence that Lanny had on me, or of Kristen Holmes on Mark Mabry and others that have gone on, and influences they've had and what a difference they've made. In this morning's lesson, I'm not going to be looking backwards so much, but want us to think about what lies in store, what's ahead of us. What does 2016 hold for us? And just don't know for sure. Will we be needing air conditioning again at Christmas time? At our house, I think Christmas Eve, it was 78 degrees in the living room before John lit the fire. And it was, it's just unusual. Think about what we've seen in the news and in terrorist activities, whether in Paris or in stateside, or the work of ISIS in the Middle East, uncertainty about that, about the economy and what it holds, or what the job market holds. Don't really know. Think about Linda's favorite, technology and e-commerce, and just, I think General Motors this year is supposed to release a car with a limited self-driving capability, Super Cruise capability on one of their Cadillacs. And I think Amazon now has 2-hour delivery in as close as Murfreesboro, Ben Parker's area, and other folks in Nashville have it as well. And then it's an election year, a year for elections, and don't know what may occur in that. Well, the Bible doesn't speak directly about those in particular, but I'd argue it speaks about some things that are more important than those. And we'll spend a little bit of time looking at places where the Bible speaks about things that are to come, things that were to come in the cases of some of the folks, and begin with a passage that's a little bit unusual, but it's from 2 Samuel. It's 2 Samuel chapter 12, and it's when David was praying for the child that Bathsheba had born to him. And it was a child that was ill, was prophesied to die. David spent 7 days fasting and praying for it. And when the child died, the servants were saying, what are we going to do? They were afraid to tell him, afraid of his reaction when he learned the child was dead. And so David noticed his servants were whispering among themselves, and he realized the child was dead. And he asked, is the child dead? Yes, they replied. Then David got up from the ground, and after he had washed and put on lotions and changed his clothes, he went to the house of the Lord and worshipped. Then he went to his own house, and at his request, they served him food, and he ate. And his servants said, we don't understand. We don't understand what's up with this. Why are you acting this way? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept. It was as if you were in mourning while the child was alive. But now that the child is dead, you get up and eat. And he answered, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. I thought, who knows, the Lord may be gracious to me and let the child live. But now that he is dead, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I will go to him, but he will not return to me. And that verse has just always intrigued me. It's always just made me stop and think about the passing of loved ones, what David understood and knew, what the Lord had inspired him to know. And it brings about the topic that we'll be looking at. But what can we learn from David's words? Is it an isolated case, as it's taught elsewhere in Scripture? What do we expect? And indeed, there are other scriptures that speak to this same kind of thought, starting back as early as Genesis 15, where early in Abram's time, before he had his first, before Isaac was born, We read an encounter with God that as the sun was setting, Abram fell in a deep sleep, and a thick and dreadful darkness came over him. And the Lord said to him, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated for 400 years. What's that talking about? That's the time they would be in Egypt, in the Egyptian captivity for 400 years. But I'll punish the nation they serve as slave, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions." And indeed, that's what happened when the children of Israel were freed. Those prophecies came true. And then there's one other. "You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age." And starting with Abram, there were promises made or discussions about good and godly people who went to be with their fathers, or another phrase that's commonly used, were gathered to their people. Were gathered to their people. So this is Genesis 15. Abram lived many, many years after this account. Lived to be 175 years, we read 10 chapters later in Genesis 25. Abram breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years. And that prophecy that was spoken to him, God has recorded in this book, and he was gathered to his people. He was gathered to his people. Just interesting to think about what that meant, what that was like. And that phrase wasn't isolated to just the discussion about David or Abram. We read about Ishmael or Jacob or Aaron or Josiah or Isaac or Moses. It's repeated in different ways again and again, either as prophecies that this will happen or as it has happened in those cases, that they were gathered to their people. It wasn't limited to David's loss of his son. And indeed, in my NIV Bible, in that passage in 2 Samuel 12, there's a cross-reference, and it's a cross-reference over to this verse, to Judges 2, verse 10 about it. And in Judges 2, it's after Joshua dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of their land, each to his own inheritance. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and the elders who outlived him and who had seen the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, the son of Nun, servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. They buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. And look at what verse 10 says. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up. And it's talking about a generation that did not know the Lord. But what struck me in this reference was it wasn't an isolated case. It wasn't one or two individuals. It was a whole generation of folks who passed on. And it speaks of all of those being gathered to their fathers. So I take from that it's not something that's about select individuals, not limited to select individuals, if you will. And then there's some other passages that touch on it. There's this one about Isaac's death. It says, "Jacob came home to his father Isaac in Mamre near Kiriath Arba," that is Hebron, where Abram and Isaac had stayed. "Isaac lived 180 years, and he breathed his last, was gathered to his people, old and full of years, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him." Now, it's just a distinction, a little distinction there. He was gathered to his people, and his sons buried him. Those weren't, most folks think, those weren't referring to the same event, that he was gathered to his people as he was laid to rest with them, if you will. You see that a little bit further as you think about Moses in Deuteronomy 32, where Moses is told that there on the mountain that you have climbed, you will die. As he goes up to look at the promised land and has that opportunity, he's told that there on the mountain you will die. Be gathered to your people just as your brother Aaron died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people. And I think about God telling Moses in advance, you remember what happened to Aaron? You're going down this same path. It's gonna occur to you. It's kind of like growing up where my brothers in the small town I went to, you know, when they got to be a certain age, they went to a certain school, and sure enough, that was the same place I went. They had the same teachers that I had, by and large, went down the same kind of path to a certain extent. And God's telling Moses, well, you're going to be going down this same path. But Moses was going to be gathered to his people. But you remember a little bit later, and it's in chapter 34 of Deuteronomy, Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in Moab. As the Lord has said, the Lord buried him in Moab in the valley opposite Beth Peor. But to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Moses wasn't laid to rest in a family cemetery with all his kinfolks. He was buried by God in an isolated place. Nobody knows where it is, by himself. But still, he was gathered to his people. That's what God said was going to happen to him, that he was gathered to his people. So it's just a note that term, I don't believe is a euphemism for laid to rest with your kinfolks. I don't believe that's what it's talking about there. And indeed, you go back to that first passage in Genesis 15, and when it talks about Abram, you will go to your fathers in peace, it says, and be buried at a good old age. It's interesting to think about being gathered to our people. Being gathered to our people, and what does that mean to us? It's not just isolated in a sense to the Old Testament. Think about when Jesus was on the cross and there were folks fighting him, and one of the thieves stands up for him. And Jesus says down in Luke 23, verse 42, he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you'll be with me in paradise, that you will be with me there. On the other side of eternity, on the other side of this life. And that concept is, I think, an important one for us. The songs that we sing, not surprisingly, reflect that theme. For times, many of the songs that Tommy had for this morning were songs that had that sort of theme in it. We didn't this one, but it's one that we know about if we ever meet again, this side of heaven. There's another meeting place somewhere in heaven by the side of the river of life. Or yes, we'll gather at the river. The words that speak of that gather together again. Or in the sweet by and by, we'll meet on that beautiful shore. And when we sing those words, we don't always think about that's speaking of. But there's a basis, I believe, through Scripture for the idea of being gathered. Bible tells us it's going to be different. We read passages about there won't be marriage and being given in marriage. It'll be different there than it is today, but still a gathering together of a special type. So when we read about God's faithful in passages like Hebrews, and we read about their outlook on life, a theme that was common for God's faithful was looking to the future, and not just wondering, will they need air conditioning on Christmas Day? Or not just wondering about the economy and the job market, but looking at other things. After listing so many of the faithful, verse 13 of Hebrews 11 says, all these people, and I put in brackets the ones that were noted in the earlier verses, Abel or Enoch or Noah, or Abram, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't receive all the things promised. There were promises yet to come for them. They only saw them and they welcomed them from a distance, and they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel like we don't truly belong here? This world truly isn't our home? There's a reason why we feel that way. It isn't our home. Paul writes about us being strangers and aliens in this world. Said if they'd been thinking of a country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were looking for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. He has prepared a city. He's prepared a city for them. And passages like Jesus' words in John 14 about let not your heart be troubled. You know, believe in God, believe also in me. And in my Father's house, there are many mansions. If it weren't so, I would have told you, but I go to prepare a place for you. And he says, if I go and do that, I'm going to come again, and I'm going to receive you. I'm going to take you home with me, receive you to myself. Well, those folks in Hebrews 11 were folks that lived with that kind of promise in mind, their minds set on eternity, their hearts set on eternity. Jesus wanted us to live that way, and he taught about that throughout his ministry and in the Sermon on the Mount early in his teaching in Matthew chapter 6. He tells us not to lay up treasures on earth. He says they're just going to rot. They're just going to rust away. They're just going to be stolen. They're just going to be eaten up by moths. You're just going to lose them all. He says don't lay up treasures here. Set your treasures, build them up in heaven. Nothing's going to take them away in that sense. Because where your treasure is, that's where your heart's going to be. So much of our time in this life is spent fretting or worrying or just obsessing about the stuff of this life, though, isn't it? As opposed to those things that do matter in eternity. And it's just a good reminder. If Linda can remind me from time to time, if others can remind me from time to time, and just ask the question, is this thing you're so focused on, is it going to matter one bit in eternity? Helps to put things in perspective. Because there are treasures that we can lay up in eternity, that we can build up for eternity. And given the choice, it makes sense that that's what our lives ought to be about. What we ought to be focused on now. So Paul, in writing to the Colossians, encouraged them to be about that. He said, since you've been raised up with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. He said, don't be focused on things on this earth. And then he says, you've died. You're starting to live in the future. You're starting to be separated from the things of this earthly life, and you're life is hidden with Christ in God. And then he speaks of us being with him. When Christ, who is your life, appears, when he comes back to receive us to himself, says, then you also will appear with him in glory. So even this verse about having our hearts and minds focused in the future speaks of being together with one that loves us, with our Savior, one that died for us in a place that is prepared for us. So what does the future hold for us? I can't really answer about those. And your guess would be every bit of it or probably better than mine on each of those. But there are, without questions, things that we can know and be certain about with regard to the future. We can know for sure that earthly things, what's in a bank account, what's on a business card, what may or may not be on a diploma, what kind of car, what house you live in, none of that's going to be around or matter. We're going to be separated from all of that. It's going to be left behind. I think of going through airport security, and on occasion, I've forgotten to take my pocket knife out of my pocket. And when that happened, it got left behind. Or if I hadn't drunk all of my Diet Coke, sorry, Rob. It got left behind. There's a separation that's coming for everything that's material. There's a better place for us. There's just no question about that. I think about the not knowing what heaven will be like, and then I'm reminded to look at the beautiful sunsets or the starry skies at night or look at the glory of snow-capped mountains and think, the one who created those majestic wonders beyond anything I could ever imagine or create myself, that's the one that's prepared a place for you and for me, a place prepared for us. And this idea that there's a gathering to our fathers, to our people, it it means a lot to me. An idea of being with the best folks you could ever imagine being with and spending eternity there. So God's blessed us in this life with countless blessings. No question about that. And I'm so thankful for not running low on supplies. I'm so thankful for what He has done for us here. But don't lose sight of those treasures above and beyond that, the treasures that are awaiting us in heaven. And among those treasures is being with spiritual families, being with those that love us and care about us. And so as you go into 2016 and think about what matters in life, as you go forward and thinking about what's before us, one of the things I'd ask that you do is reflect on what's not going to matter in eternity. Kind of push it in the background a little bit more. Think about what will be there in eternity. Bring it forward a little bit. And take the opportunity in the times we have to build relationships, to strengthen relationships, to be a peacemaker, to say a word of encouragement, to show some love. Take the time to strengthen those, because I believe that's part of how we do lay up those treasures in heaven. Lay up those treasures. This morning, got an opportunity just as this lesson comes to a close. If there's anyone here who wants to reinforce, to set right their relationship with the one who's making a place for his own, we've got that opportunity to do so. If folks that are here are subject in any way to the Lord's invitation, won't you come? As together we stand and sing.
Altos. Love one another, for love is of God. He who loves is born. Does not know God, for God is love. God is love.
Love bears all things seated.
So our sister Trish Murray